Hi, I'm Chad. I'm a Gen X grown-up. I support Gen X grown-up through Patreon, and you can too at patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X grown-up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X grown-up podcast listeners, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X grown-up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And, of course, George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know, when Atari's Pong released in 1972, it ignited our fascination with electronic games. It wasn't long before companies were cranking out miniature electronic games you could hold in the palm of your hand. In this episode, we're remembering those vintage Gen X-era handheld and tabletop video games that held us over until our next trip to the arcade. I remember getting my buddy's football and playing it with the LEDs. And
Good.
Oh, there's so many of these. Okay, before we get into that, I can't wait to get into that.
We have some pre-show.
Let's get into that. We have some fourth listener email. Our longtime supporter over on Patreon, Slow Mo, wrote in, and he had something to say about the 1981 Hits episode, our Billboard Top 100. Okay. All right, so Slow Mo writes, Gen X gentlemen loved the Billboard Hits of 1981 episode. The list episodes have consistently been my favorites, and this one reaffirmed that.
All right, well, cool.
Okay, thanks for the feedback.
Yeah.
It's great to get little nuggets of trivia along with making me remember how important that music was to me when I was a teenager.
Yeah, no kidding.
That was the big point, right?
I remember hearing it. Every time you heard one of those songs, a memory hit of something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Right after he says that, though, there's a giant but.
Uh-oh.
Couldn't just stop there, huh?
He couldn't stop there.
Apparently something is afoot.
Something is afoot at the Circle K. Being who I am, I had to draw attention to a minor factual inaccuracy.
Oh, Jesus. What'd I do now?
And I would have ignored it, except it was said twice and you all were agreeing with it.
Uh-oh.
Okay. My OCD just couldn't let it pass. All right. Let's see what you got, Slow Mo. Olivia Newton-John was not in the god-awful 1985 movie Perfect with John Travolta. It was another mega hottie at the time, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck.
Damn it. He's right.
Damn it. He's right. Oh, my God. I'm embarrassed. I am embarrassed by that.
Now I can see her in her little headband with that little short hair.
The leotard.
Shit.
Damn.
So here's the problem. I can almost remember a world where it was Olivia Newton-John.
Glitch in the Matrix.
Yes, it's a glitch in my Matrix.
It's a Berenstain Bears issue.
Right. I know that you're right, that it was absolutely Jamie Lee Curtis. He actually mentions, by the way, Jamie Lee Curtis, whose scenes 2 years later in Trading Places were the one that every teenage boy would constantly pause on his VCR.
Two years earlier.
Factual. Not later. We get these facts straight. It was 2 years earlier. You said later.
Oh, I'm getting another email. Yes, 2 years earlier. Sorry. No, you're absolutely right. But yeah, I paused that video many times. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pink ruffle dress. Yep.
I don't know what I was thinking, but I guess Olivia Newton-John, they're like similar. They're tall, thin, attractive blonde women. And like she was, like Jamie Lee Curtis was in the film. And
no, we were just wrong.
We were wrong. We had the, I think, wasn't the Let's Get Physical song part of that podcast as well? I think that was maybe where it was coloring our vision.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, I think I did it. I'm the one that said it. I remembered it. You guys didn't remember differently, but I'll own it. Yeah, you're right, Slow Mo. It's definitely Jamie Lee Curtis. Poor John Travolta. Didn't get to work with Olivia Newton-John as he'd hoped. Oh, well.
Well, he did, just in Greece.
Just in Greece. Yeah, okay.
And that's for sure, right? Don't screw me on that one. Don't tell me that.
That was in Greece. If we all agree with it, better be sure it's right.
Yeah. Somebody will call us out, apparently.
See, we read emails, even if it's telling us we were dead wrong, which we were. But we love that you enjoyed the show, of course. He wraps up his email. Fourthly, yours, Slow Mo. I like another nice salutation. I love these riffs on the fourth. I love them. Thank you again, Slow Mo, for writing in and setting us straight. We wouldn't want your OCD to be bothering you, so we got that off your chest. If you would also like your email featured here on the show, all you have to do is hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them make the show just like Slow Mo's. All right. Now, you stopped me from talking about the football game before the email, but now we're going to get into the meat of the show, and that's going to be covering that and so much more of these handheld games right after this break. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky. Mm-hmm. Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Flip is the digital game that you can take with you anywhere. With the batteries you supply, the light-emitting diode zips across the screen. You try to press the right button to send it back. An automatic readout keeps score. Two people or only one can play. When you play with Blip, you get carried away. And so does Blip. Blip, the digital game from Tomy.
These little Gen X era handheld electronic games is the topic of our backtrack this time. And I remember probably the nucleus of this backtrack, George, we did one years ago now about how we killed time on long car rides.
Oh, yes.
And one mm-hmm. that you mentioned was Quiz Whiz.
Oh,
that
yeah.
we're going to talk yes. about in a second. There was that one. Plus, there was the little football one that we talked about. You mentioned the Colecos and the Game & Watch. Oh, there's so many. As the arcade was becoming such a big deal, companies were like, well, hell, we want in on that. We can't make arcade games. But researching this, by the way, I should mention, we found a great website called miniarcade.com, M-I-N-I arcade. We'll throw a link down in the show yep. notes where you can see a lot of the pictures of these handheld toys and games we're going to be talking about. So throw that in your bookmarks to take a look at. Let's get into this. I'm going to start, George, with your Quiz Whiz. So sure. take us back into that backtrack when we were talking about how you killed time in the car, how little Quiz Whiz worked.
Yeah. So Quiz Whiz was this great little device. When you bought it, you bought the very first Quiz Whiz module along with the computer central brain device that you would use for other modules that you would mm-hmm. buy later on. The first one was a general trivia type of thing, and you would open yep. up, it would have history and film and TV and samples of all different subjects that you could do trivia on it. You know, you plug the little brain module into the enormous folder type of thing.
Yeah, it was like a little folio, right? Like, yeah. like fake leather with cardboard in it deal.
Plasticky yeah. kind of feeling, yes. like a Trapper yes. Keeper almost.
Yep.
You would open it up, and on the top part would be the trivia booklet, and on the bottom part would be the module, and you would decide which question you were going to answer. You would punch that into the little computer brain thing. And so because it was plugged into this little chip that was part of that Trapper Keeper folio thing, it would mm-hmm. know, oh, question number 21 that you just punched in, the correct answer is B. And there were right. always four choices. And you would read the question to yourself, and you would look at the answers, and you would punch in the one that you thought was the correct answer, and it would light up green if you were correct or red if you were wrong. That's all it was. That's really it is.
It's like a little algorithm. Like, it's almost like learning slash trivia. You could probably pass it off to your parents and go, I'm learning stuff. It's a game, but I'm learning.
And it was. And I was thinking I was clever. Here, I got my parents to buy this electronic game, but I ended up teaching myself a lot of trivia. This was really
the start of
my trivia journey, I guess. I ended up loving Trivial Pursuit after that, and You Don't Know Jack, and all different kinds of trivia games, but it all started with Quiz Whiz.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to another one. So, Mo, how about, there was one that I know that I think we have probably all played where we have to match somebody's little pattern of colors.
Oh my God, Simon.
Devious bastard.
Oh, I had a love-hate relationship with Simon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, we get right down to it. It was fun to play because it was very easy to find a bunch of people who wanted to play. But I sucked at it. Once you get past like 7 or 8, I was just like, oh, it's a screw it. I have no idea what the hell's going on with this stupid thing.
Well, Simon is basically Simon Says. Well, you have four buttons, red, four colors, yellow, green, blue.
And you just got to match the pattern.
Yep.
And that's all it is to it. It's very simple.
Well, and it's colors and sounds. The sounds are all different, which was fun. And that commercial is the entire reason everybody wanted to play that game.
Yeah.
That whole Simon commercial with the kids running around there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no. It was good for everybody.
If you have four people playing where each person takes a color.
Oh, screw that. Somebody always screws that up. I can't trust anybody to punch the Simon button for me.
Oh, was that you? I apologize for that now. That was probably me.
He was that kid.
Like, beep, 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 beep. Damn it, Mo! I screwed it up again.
And didn't Simon have like 4 or 5 game modes? I never played but game mode 1. I'm just matching the colors. All the other ones, I'm like,
yeah, because they actually had a game mode where you had like 4 players, and then if when I screwed up.
When it was you, right?
Yeah,
you screwed up.
They would take that color out of the rotation.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I never explored those other versions.
Yeah, they had a bunch of different game options on it. But,
okay.
But let me tell you, I mean, I can't think of a single friend's house I went to that did not have this game.
No, everybody had it. Everybody had one.
So it was pretty cool.
And they still sell them. You could buy a brand new Simon today.
Oh, yeah.
You could buy a keychain Simon. You could buy a full-size Simon. Yep. Yeah,
there's one of those little keychain versions. It's not Simon. It's a knockoff, but my wife has it sitting right next to her on the couch, and she plays it all the time.
Simone. He's an accent over the eye. He's Latin.
Yeah. Now, George, you played a game that I have really fond memories of. Why don't you talk about that one?
Merlin? Yeah. The giant red telephone game of 1981. It looks just like an old telephone. I love
that
thing. It was a 3x3 grid in the middle of it, and down at the bottom, there were 4 different buttons that allowed you to select game mode or different options within the game modes. And at the top, there was a speaker. And it was the coolest Buck Rogers looking electronic game I ever owned.
It looked high tech.
I love this thing. Now, that's all it had. It didn't have any overlays to make you play the game differently, but there were 4 different games involved in it. One of them was tic-tac-toe, which is pretty obvious with the 3x3 grid.
Right.
There was a musical one as well, which was similar to Simon. It was kind of like a follow the pattern kind of thing. But what's interesting enough, there was also a game mode that you could compose your own musical tones. That made Merlin the first consumer grade musical synthesizer ever.
That's awesome.
And it was this little handheld toy for kids.
And in the book, they had like, here's how you could play Mary Had a Little Lamb. It's like,
exactly.
You know, 3, 4, 4, 7, 6, 2, 1, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm a musician. No, you're not. You're just pushing buttons on this little toy. But
that's
it,
all
it
a pianist does is push buttons. Come on.
Just push buttons on that big toy. That's right. I'm just as good.
Now, John, Merlin was from Parker Brothers. Now, they did a successor to Merlin that was a lot more complicated, but also a lot more rare because it didn't really sell as well.
That's right.
Yeah. And I know it's one of your favorites because you got one and refurbished it.
I sure did. Yeah, Split Second was really neat. Now, it was one that I didn't see back when Merlin was a big deal, although it came out like the year right after it. Well, Merlin was a hit, as you said, everybody wanted one. And then they put out Split Second, which also looked like a big red cell phone, little slightly different shaped. It, rather than buttons, what it had was more like a traditional video game. It had 4 up, down, left, right buttons for navigation. And then the screen was LEDs. And it had 5 different games you could play. You could try to like match what somebody's doing, or it had like a version of Snake, an early version of Snake, where you move the little guy around catching dots,
catching dots. Yeah.
I actually have 2 of them. I have a fully functional one that I restored in that video. And then I have the spare one that I used for donor parts to restore that one. But but the one I have is in fantastic shape, and it's still fun to play. You can throw batteries in that thing. Like so many of these, it's because it's so rudimentary. There's no learning curve. What's the rules? learning curve over. Now you're just seeing how's level two, how's level three, how's level four. And it's another one. It's still a lot of fun to mess around with. And the old tech, especially, I think is the, now it used to be the game was the draw. Now that old technology is the draw for me. It's just,
you know, that's something we should point out at this point. You just mentioned LED and old tech.
Yeah.
There were really two distinct groups of these games, and they all started off, I think, pretty much with LED, the little red LED light.
Yeah, that was,
and that was
really
before
technology.
You could have the different colors of LEDs and stuff. Yep. And then later on, some of the ones we're going to talk about later on in the podcast were LCD. Mm-hmm. Now, they were set characters on an LCD screen, like they were burned images type of things where
they just, you know, lit up just on
which
or
one
off.
Was lit up.
Certain cells could get lit up by putting voltage, and it turned the crystals opaque, and so it looked like it was dark area. Yeah,
but that's my point, though, is these were either one or the other of those two technologies for the most part. And our imaginations allowed us to have so much fun with those simple technologies. LED, it's a simple red light. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But turning it on and off in different locations around a physical device, it just mesmerized me for hours on Merlin and Your Split Second, those types of games and others that we're going to talk about. I loved the fact that that technology is what we're really focused on with these older games.
The cool thing about Merlin, I still remember, and this was kind of a bane, is that I like would sneak it when I went to bed because
you could.
Because you could see the little lights. It was just so cool to play in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know?
It was glowing red under your blanket. Like, yes.
You throw the bed sheet over top of you. And
yeah, exactly.
Now, they brought more than just traditional video games. These are almost not even, this is pre-arcade style games.
Yeah, these are like miscellaneous games. Yeah.
Yeah. They brought in like even like traditional card games like blackjack and poker.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You'd have a little handheld. Yeah.
Specifically blackjack, I remember, because I found one of those early blackjack games in probably Montgomery Ward's or Sears or something like that. And I remember talking my mother into buying it because, A, I wanted it as an electronic game. But my father was a huge gambler, and that was one of the few things that we could share together. Mm-hmm. He didn't like the Atari 2600. He was always pissed when I would try and commandeer the TV in the living
TV
room
for
to
it.
Play.
TV set, yeah.
But this was something that he and I could bond over because blackjack is a gambling game. He loves it, but it was an electronic device, which I loved. Mm-hmm. He played that thing religiously, especially at our grocery store. He would sit back there in his little manager's chair, and he would just play that blackjack game for hours.
George, just a customer. Go take care of him.
Right. And he would hand it off to the other employees and say, here, if you can beat my score, we'll play for $10. I mean, he was gambling with the gambling video game.
I was gambling on the gambling.
Yeah.
I was just
about to say, there was no stakes. Why would he play it? Well, he made his own stakes.
Oh, yeah. My dad could find a way to gamble about anything. It didn't matter.
My brother David had one of those, like, the blackjack ones. And after a while, he played so much, he memorized the patterns. Like, he knew what cards would come up.
Oh, wow.
Because it was a finite pattern inside of the memory.
Patterns, and he would just know, like, the patterns. So he's like, okay, now I could just broke the machine because he got so much money.
Just hit the high score, roll it over.
He made the game a game, effectively. Yeah. He's like, I've learned how to master the programming of the game, which is cool. You know, I mentioned Pong at the head of the show, and one that I remember not having, but so many of these I didn't have, but a friend had. There's going to be a recurring theme here. But there's one called Blip that was basically Pong.
Blip, yes.
Made by Tomy, and it had that super, it was machinery inside of it. Like, it wasn't a screen. It had a red LED inside of it. And it was literally moving the red LED under this black smoked glass. And you could hear the little servos moving as it moved back and forth on this XY axis.
And you had the little paddles.
It physically moved the ball.
Yes.
Yes.
And you had the little paddles on the side that you physically moved up or down. And when the LED little plastic piece hit the pad, it would move
back. If it could reach
the
end and there was nothing to stop it, then the ball got past you. But if your thing was there, but if you squint, like, you don't see all that nice smoke glass, it's like a super high res Pong because it's a real light under real glass. Because everyone wants to play Pong, right? You want to go, because Pong is brand new. Blip came out like a table tennis, might have, I want to say it's shortly after Pong. Came out in 77, and what Pong is 70,
it had to be after Pong.
Pong was 72.
Pong was
Pong was
70.
So it was like 5 years after.
77,
this was a few years.
Actually, that's one of those games I would love to get my hands on and take it apart and see how
it works.
Because
it's mechanical. I know. Yeah. And actually, there is a full-size Pong machine. It kind of replicates that. They use magnets to move a physical ball under the glass.
Oh, wow.
It was a modern version of Pong that actually is kind of a throwback to Blip in many ways, which is kind of funny.
You know, one of the ones that I really enjoyed, and I still actually have the original console that my mother bought for me, was a video game that was based around the Star Wars franchise. We know Star Wars licensed their name out to every damn thing.
Yep.
out there, right? So this was a little white plastic device. It was sort of in the vague shape of a Commodore PET, if you remember those devices where it's kind of the monitor built in with the keyboard.
Okay, right.
Do you remember who made this by any chance?
No, I don't, because it said Star Wars everywhere, and that's all I cared about at the time.
And good luck on the internet searching for Star Wars game.
Exactly. I'm sure we'll find it. But it was so much fun. It was because it was tying it into the movie that I loved. Essentially, you were just trying to move around and find enemy ships and destroy them. So part of the game you played on the screen, the other part you played on a little pad that came with it. So you would have to mark the different little grid sectors and stuff. It had a little keyboard in the middle, right where the Commodore PET keyboard would have been. It was one of those membrane style keyboards, though, not buttons or anything. So after a while, it got very difficult to press the different buttons on it.
Right.
But I loved that Star Wars game so much. I still, you know, I kept it in my big giant metal toy box that has survived for 40 years. And to this day, I still want to, I know it's still in that toy box somewhere. I need to go find it.
I found a picture of it. This is so much cooler than I imagined. It is a little computer.
Really?
With like a grid on the top, and it's got alert combat force units. And it has the classic picture of Luke with the lightsaber up over his head, right, and it's glowing, and Leia is kind of kneeling next to him.
It's very much got some of the elements of your Dark Tower game, John.
Does it?
Yeah, like, you know, we have units against other units and stuff, a little bit of Risk type of flavor.
Oh, wow.
A lot of fun. Enjoyed that game to no end.
It's going for over $100 used.
Wow.
Yeah, they're proud of it.
George, you'll be ripping open that toy box here.
I know, right?
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.
Ladies and gentlemen, we challenged hotshot Dick Joukowsky to play the Mattel Electronics football game. Dick doesn't know. Inside is a tiny thinking computer that plays like a whole team of pros. Dick's got the ball, but that computer defense is tough. He drives up the middle. Stopped cold.
1 yard.
Now Dick cuts left down the sidelines. Touchdown. Mattel Electronics pocket football with the built-in computer.
Hey, who's in there?
It's only fair that we dedicate a segment of our handheld electronic games to a class of electronic game that was probably the largest seller and best known globally. Although, ironically, none of the three of us ever owned one. Which is kind of funny, but we're not going to dismiss it because it's so important. And that's the Nintendo Game & Watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Holy cow. Yeah.
Now, this was created by a designer named Gunpei Yokio. It was derived the name because it featured a game and a clock on its LCD screen.
Yes.
Game & Watch. That was the idea.
Okay.
In fact, later models starting in like mid 80s, you could have an alarm too. So it was a Game & Watch and alarm. They didn't change the name. It's still that.
Now it's Game & Watch and stopwatch.
Time to go back to homework.
Right. Yep. Yeah. No, it's not. I just set that alarm for way in the future. Homework is tomorrow. That's tomorrow John's problem. Tonight John is playing game. But the Game & Watch series sold a combined 43.5 million units worldwide. It was the earliest Nintendo video game product to gain major success. And it put them on the trajectory to be who you know of Nintendo today.
Yep. Yeah. Now, I didn't ever have a Nintendo Game & Watch. I had some kind of knockoff brand. Well, I didn't have it. A friend of mine had it.
Yeah.
And I remember in that middle school lunchroom where I took my pork chop lunchbox that everybody makes
yes,
fun of.
Right.
Your mom baked early in the morning.
Yep. One of the kids had one of those style of games. And we would just sit there and everybody would get to take turns on it. I think that was one of the big parts of these electronic handheld games. Somebody would own one, but that meant the whole group owned it, right?
That's
so everybody
exactly
would get to trade it around and play with it. You all had your time. And if somebody was hogging the time, then you all kicked his butt, that kind of a thing. It was so much fun. I really enjoyed sitting with a group of friends, seeing who could get the best score on one of these electronic games.
Because you couldn't just say, this is a great game, go to the app store and get it. You had to stay and be social.
Right.
I'm going to go over to George's house because he has that football game. Or I'm going to go to Mo's house because he's got this gal like a game or whatever, whatever's out there.
Or I got to pretend to like John because he has this
game. Yeah, right. Much like you do today. Exactly. I get it. That makes sense. They released nearly 50 models. And by the way, the latest, they just put out a new Game & Watch that had Mario in it.
Really?
That's way different. Yeah, Nintendo did this. They've been doing this throwback thing. They just put out one that has the original Mario Brothers, that the whole game is in there through emulation, which is awesome. But they're still putting them out. Now, they had a bunch of early on generic ones, like games like Ball, Flagman,
Ball,
Fire, Vermin, just like one. Oh, this one's about a dog. This one's about
Vermin.
Just
really
Vermin. Yeah. I'm not saying I played it. That was the name of one on the list called Vermin.
Vermin. I'm intrigued by that one. Okay.
Right? That's got to be the one that's going for $200 on eBay right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because probably not a people, a lot of people bought Vermin, so it's pretty rare to get a hold of it. Now, early on, they were like a single screen. Later, what I loved was they opened up like the Nintendo DS is modeled after the later model
Game &
Watches.
That's the one my friend kind of had, was one of those flip top ones.
Right. It has a screen on the top and the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they very much copied that kind of design because it was recognized, ooh, that's a Nintendo thing. When they did the Nintendo dual screen, the DS, it looked like that.
Oh.
But the game was seamless. It played from one screen to the next. It was kind of like one big screen, like the Nintendo DS kind of is. But when it first hit my radar was when they started later in later 80s, coming out with ports of their arcade classics. So they did a Donkey Kong game and watch. They did Junior, Mario Brothers, Popeye, all of those they came out with. And it was not the game at all. It wasn't even pretending.
And I think it's important to point out, though, we've mentioned LED and LCD. Most of these, I think all of them were in the LCD.
LCD.
LCD, right.
LCD.
They,
that's right.
Yeah, because they had the tiny battery, so they couldn't really.
Mm-hmm. And they were those frozen images, like you were saying, John, that they just lit up that image in it. The little guy would move across the screen. Or the little barrel would be bouncing and it was just one image.
He only had
the other.
Like five spots he could be in as he walked, as he goes across. So for example, I'll tell you the Donkey Kong version, which I have played. Here's the premise. So you go up three ziggurat levels and then you jump your last barrel. Then you have to grab a crane hook to swing around and get away from Donkey Kong. That was never in Donkey Kong. They just had to find a different mechanism because they didn't have as much you could do with the limited, I'll call it pixel cells, whatever. They're in the LCD.
Yeah, because it's not like they could have different levels like we're in the arcade game.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yep. And so certain ones would light up and you do some variable thing.
Oh, one thing. So I remember a buddy of mine had one of these watches and it had a headphone jack. Have you seen those?
Really?
So this is a Game & Watch or just a watch?
Yeah, a Game & Watch. Somebody, and it had a headphone jack so you could put headphones in and listen to it without like, anybody else hearing.
Was that a real Nintendo one? I have to look that up. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was the Firefox one or something like that.
Huh. Okay.
Wow.
I said they packed a lot for, especially for the time.
Mm-hmm.
They packed a ton into that little tiny space.
Well, you talked about your buddy who learned through the blackjack thing. These were so simple that you could pretty quickly figure out what's the pattern you're going to do and you could master them. And then it became, I played the game. Now I'm gaming the game. How do I maximize it? How do I min-max this game? Can I get all the way through without pushing the button? Can I, would just play with what you could do in it. And when Game & Watch really started popping up on radar again is just in the last couple of years because MAME, the Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator project, open source, used to be just arcade machines. They've recently started emulating these handheld machines, including Game & Watch.
Really?
Wow.
They're preserving the software that was on the chips.
Huh.
It fits inside of the MAME mantra, which is to preserve hardware that will deteriorate. So they've captured the logic on the boards, and you can download the artwork, and it looks like an LCD. You see the pieces light up.
That's kind of cool.
As it travels around, you can play the game just like you could. The controls are baked right in. And you could play all these old things. And so I started downloading the art packs. That's how I first played the Donkey Kong. I never owned it back in the, whenever it came out in the mid-80s. But now you can play all of those.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great way to re-experience them. Merlin's on there. Split Second is on there. All these are in it.
Nice. Man.
You know, there's one thing that's kind of starting to piss me off about this podcast.
Uh-oh.
And? That is?
I'm going to have to go to eBay and spend a shit ton of money to try and grab every Nintendo Game & Watch that's out there.
Your childhood favorite toys.
Yeah. I mean, I can see now why some people, in their YouTube channels, they have these displayed in their backgrounds because these are part of our childhood. And now I'm going to have to get all the ones that we've talked about, plus the ones we're going to talk about. And Nintendo Game & Watch is going to freaking break me. 50 different models? Jesus.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes. And luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Merlin's a game that you can play. You can play it six different ways.
Some like to play at tic-tac-toe. Others can test their skill at Echo.
Some play a tune on Music Machine or try to play Blackjack 13.
Merlin is six electronic games in one. It's really fun for most everyone in the family. Six penlight batteries not included.
With lights and sounds.
Six games in one.
Merlin's a game that's lots of fun.
Merlin, six electronic games in one. From Parker Brothers.
While we're talking about the fact that I'm going to have to reacquire all these damn electronic consoles.
Yes, you are.
One of the ones that's going to be very fun for me to reacquire are all the sports electronic handheld games. That really kind of was where I got my big start in these devices. I don't know if you guys remember, but Mattel was one of the big early
people
who created a lot of these.
Yeah.
Coleco had a whole bunch of them. Tommy. There was a company called Intex that did some of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were so much fun. And for me, as a kid who loved sports, baseball, basketball, football, to be able to play that game with you know, your friends crowding around shoulder to shoulder,
sort of
with quotes
kind
around
of play
it.
That
yeah,
game
play with quotes but
listen it was the game, that's all I cared about. Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, Mattel alone, let's start off with some of theirs. Now, they had some quasi sports ones, ones that weren't like the major three sports, like ski slalom.
Mm-hmm.
This was literally in red LED screen. Your LED was your guy, and he would stay in one position and move left or right as the other LEDs came down the screen at him on either side.
Yeah.
You'd have to move out of the way so you wouldn't hit him.
You're going through the gates. You're going back and forth
exactly.
through the gates. Yeah, makes
those
sense.
Were fun. We all enjoyed them. But really, the biggest Mattel one out there, no question about it, had to be Mattel football.
It's got to be the football. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't play a lot of sports as a kid. I mean, I played, you know, casually and socially, you know, around, but I wasn't like into, you know, team sports or anything. But even I had a Mattel football. That thing,
mm-hmm.
if I remember, you actually had to cross the screen 10 times. Like every yes. time I crossed the screen yes. was 10 yards.
Because each screen was 10 yards.
That's right. You kept repeating. You go off one side, come on the other.
Yep.
And after a while, you could absolutely master it. But it was still cool.
There was
it
like
was
three
great.
Different defenses that they had or two different defenses.
They were not that bright.
Yeah. No. And, you know, those little chips, they couldn't hold a lot of information to move the LEDs, light up which LEDs and whatnot at different times.
Yeah.
But it was such a popular game that even iconically made it into the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yep, it did. Yeah. You
know? Oh, yeah, yeah.
They also did a basketball one, which was very difficult to play and understand logically. But it was very similar to the football, where you would move your player across the screen to the goal, essentially.
Hmm. I feel like I've seen that one, but I've never played
it. I just remember there were certain positions that you had to get in to press the shoot button.
Uh-huh.
And those positions, you know, if you got to them safely.
Yes,
then
there was like a printed spot
shoot.
On the glass almost
yeah.
that you had to be under. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The funny thing with basketball was that you could get the hockey one, and it was pretty much the same as
the
basketball
one. It was almost the exact
same
game, right?
Same game.
It was just a different overlay. And they did that a lot with those games. They would use the same logic chip, but just put a different overlay over it, and then it was a different game.
It's baseball. No, it's softball. No, it's cricket.
Right? Yeah. It's hockey. It's soccer. It's basketball.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Why not?
If it's shooting into a goal, we can make a game.
Now, you mentioned Coleco. I remember they started to add some kind of swerve to the offering. They added two-player. Remember the head-to-head ones
where
you had buttons on both ends of the controller?
Actually, I would consider them the spiritual successor to the Mattel line. Mattel were almost always the single-player, and then when you got done with your turn, you'd have to pass it around to
pass
the other
over.
Person.
Right.
Coleco, you could not only have two-player, you played head-to-head against each other
at the same
in the
time.
Game.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you were playing football, one guy was playing defense, the other guy was playing offense. My favorite, though, there was a basketball one. I think there was even a baseball one, but that was by a different company. I mean, there were so many of those head-to-head games.
Yours.
I love those things. They were awesome.
You know, the irony of the head-to-head Colecos, even though they came later, is that it's actually easier to do because there's no AI to calculate. You don't have to figure out, or did they have single player in
they
them
single
too?
Player. They almost did. All of them had single player.
They had single player in
did
those.
They? Yeah. Okay.
Which is basically the original non-head-to-head version.
If you had to play single player and you owned the head-to-head version, then you were lame. Nobody liked you, apparently, because if you had an electronic device, everybody wanted to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, in those days, for sure. So you talked about the racing games, and there's one in particular that I really, really remember. There are a bunch of them that were just all LEDs, but I remember this one because it wasn't LEDs. It was physical. Tomy put out this digital derby auto raceway. And the thing with it was the race car was like a little transparent car on a stick that literally moved back and forth.
Your wheel just kind of rotated.
Your wheel slid back and forth. It feels like it was like a conveyor belt of cars or underneath.
It was very much like that original arcade game. There was an arcade game that was similar to that.
You're right. It's just like that.
Right.
It was very physical.
Just, like a little plastic thing that you just move back and forth, right?
Yep. Yep. And it still took batteries and had sounds and it kept score.
And when it detected a collision, then the little belts would stop spinning and the cars would stop coming at you to make the collision sound.
Yeah, and it had a little red light in it that would flash when you wrecked, I think.
Yeah.
Make a little noise. So all the electronics in it were just running the belt and keeping score. The rest was almost all physical, which I thought was, for all these electronic ones.
Very similar to Blip, right? Like we talked about earlier.
Like Blip. It was electronic, but it was kind of physical too. Yeah, I thought that was a neat one that I remember having, actually.
Now, I was saying earlier, one of my favorites, and this one wasn't by Coleco, wasn't by Mattel, but it was Intex. It was Baseball 3.
What was different about Baseball 3?
The baseball games, yeah. Baseball 3, it was awesome. Just the fact that you could see the little baseball field overlay on a little handheld electronic device. And baseball was my favorite sport. It's a simple concept for an electronic game, right? Mm-hmm. You have a player here, and then somebody can throw a different type of pitch. And if you swing at the right moment, that player runs to advance to the base, and you get hits and singles and doubles and home runs. And oh, so much fun. So simple, but still, my imagination, every time I was like, it's, two outs in the bottom of the ninth in the World Series, and I'm stepping up to plate.
You know, and you've said many times, Mo, about how you appreciate early video games that had limited availability to memory and colors and pixels and everything, and how much you had to work at it. I think really when I think back to these games, the thing that impresses me most is how they got so much excitement into so little processing power. We got a home run. A home run is just another subroutine, but they have a good little some dumb little song or something to make you feel, hey, I got the cool song. Something happened. They crammed excitement into a game that literally was the same thing you're using in the lab to calculate formulas. It's just a little computer, but they made it created emotions out of it with a little speaker and little rules. And that's what kind of made it so magic.
Yeah. And George, just to go back to something you said earlier about how this was like a social thing, having one of these things.
Yeah.
Is that I remember as a kid, especially with these games, the sports ones especially, was that if your birthday was coming up and somebody, your parents like, which one do you want? You wanted to make sure you got one that nobody else had yet.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily for the, oh, I got something different. It was more like, okay, now we could swap.
Right.
You're like building a community library of electronic games.
Right. We don't have that one yet. You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As or a you group, got the brand new one.
The football that, yet. Yep. So let's get that. And that's just part of the I remember these things.
I remember we would have that discussion at school. Like every time somebody in our little group was going to have a birthday, it would be in class. Okay, let's list all the ones we have and let's figure out which one we want to get next.
Yeah, which one do you want to ask for so that we can complete our neighborhood block collection?
Yeah.
So for what you get social game.
They got me the football one too. Oh, we already got that one.
Yep. <It's>,
like we.
You
like,
need to get your shit straight next birthday. We ain't playing this anymore.
Well, hey, podcast listener, my name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. There is, I don't know. I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show. Wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's face it, being sick is better than being in school. But it does get a little boring. I mean, how many Laverne and Shirley reruns can a guy watch? That's why this pocket pinball game is just what the doctor ordered. It's lots of fun and it's small enough to play anywhere. And the built-in alarm tells you when it's time to get more sympathy. Mom, I need something to drink. You gotta milk a good thing for all it's worth.
Pinball, the unboard game by Nintendo.
The last type of these handheld or tabletop games that I want to talk about from when we were growing up as a kid, I definitely saved the best for last, I think. And those were the ones where they literally started taking the arcade games that we played and bringing them into our home. There were a couple of manufacturers that were famous for this. One was Parker Brothers, who took their own property, Mo, one of your favorites.
Oh, yeah, Q-Bert. I mean, come on. How do you not do that? It was such a, oh, God, how to describe it? It's Q-Bert, and it was an LED version, right? Because, you know, it had little lights on it. And they kind of painted the cubes on the glass.
To light up behind it.
So, but the thing I really loved about this game is that, one, it was an upright game. Like, your controllers, the screen was, like, actually upright.
It was a little arcade machine.
It looked like a little tiny mini.
Right, the screen was vertical in front of you.
You had a big joystick.
Little control.
To move it.
Yep.
It wasn't
yep.
as good as a Q-Bert, but mm-hmm. it was a good kind of like holdover game so you could play the real thing. You know, it's like you took a little bit of imagination to see Q-Bert in it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's what the whole section is about for arcade games.
That's true. That's true.
We played these games in the arcade that we fell in love with, but we couldn't be in the arcade 24/7.
Our parents wouldn't allow it. You could play them at home, right, at the time.
Right. Now, if you'd let me, I would have. Don't get me wrong.
I would have had a sleeping bag and it would have been just fine.
Right. So they started creating these arcade handheld consoles. Games for us to take home.
Yep.
It was an extra revenue stream for them, but for us, it was a way to have the arcade at your house. I distinctly remember we had behind our little duplex, and we had the street where it was like 15 or 20 different duplexes. Behind it, we had this forest. And in this forest, there was like this weird little enclave of trees that had kind of fallen over on top of each other.
Okay.
And that was kind of like our little fort area.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I remember specifically, we had about three or four of these different arcade games. We put them in there, and that was our arcade. We even charged the other neighborhood kids a quarter to play the game.
If you had two or more of these, there is zero possibility you did not set them up and to make your own personal arcade.
Yep.
Yeah.
Zero chance you didn't do that. One that I remember made by a company you've never heard of, I don't know if they've done, called Grandstand. They made another little tabletop one like that for Scramble, like the sideways, you know, you shoot and do missiles.
Yeah.
It was a little shorter and squatter, but it had the little LCD screen. It had a stick and two buttons so you could do bullets or rockets to drop on the bottom. Like so many of these, it was a pale imitation of the original game, but what it lacked there, especially these arcade ones, is that they gave you like, look, it's kind of an arcade machine. Look, it kind of stands up and it's got a little mass to it and the screen's vertical and you have that deck jutting out from it. So you could imagine and remember that. And one more that I remember too, we're on the subject of space shooters, is a company called Intex that you mentioned before made Galaxian 2.
I've never played that one.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't Galaxian really. Galaxian in name was a space shooter, but it was like those head-to-head football games. One person could be fighting off aliens and on the other side, you could be the aliens. You could do the attack patterns and fight the guy.
Huh.
So you had that social aspect too. And they called it Galaxian 2, not because it was Galaxian. It just was two players. So it was a head-to-head version. Yep.
I don't think we're going to get out of this segment without talking about the 20-pound gorilla in the room.
20?
Well, these were smaller.
Mini
gorilla. They were like mini gorillas.
Arcade machine, right?
Yeah, 20 right, pounds. Right.
I like not 200 pounds. They're the small ones.
It's 20. It's a mini gorilla.
And that is Coleco, right? The
What was it?
Connecticut Leather Company, right?
You know, Connecticut Leather Company.
The company that never should have been in electronic games and yet created some of the best, some of the most iconic arcade handheld electronic.
They are
versions.
In huge demand today. Well, you said it. Connecticut Leather Company, they used to make like belts and wallets and stuff. And then in the 60s, they made above ground pools for a while.
Let me tell you, that's talk about a guy who could pivot.
I know, right? this is like, not selling? What's the next thing?
Yeah.
So when Pong took off in the 70s, they actually created their own console. One of the first ones in the Odyssey era, like pre-Atari, they created this Telstar line of their own little console.
Yeah, the Telstar was a really interesting little piece of equipment. It was just Pong. That's all it was. But the reason why they were able to do it was they were one of the first companies that ordered and received their Pong chips from Atari. So that's why they got to market before anybody else. And that's why the Telstar
could in the home space.
Yeah, that's why they're one of the bigger names on the Pong home console market at that point.
Yeah,
interesting.
They had a lot of issues with almost going bankrupt and different things like that because of some poor decisions they've made. And I know John knows an awful lot about this because
he knows a lot about poor decisions or
well
about poor decisions. Well, and Coleco, both things.
Yeah. But their very first super console, you know, like the Atari had the Atari 2600. Coleco's was the Coleco Vision that was prepackaged with John's favorite game of all time.
Well, that fits right in with everything we're talking about. The history of Coleco, these tabletop units, and then of course Donkey Kong that you're talking about. So when Pong took off, they did Telstar, that's great, but then Atari Atari and Television showed up and just crushed them. So they almost went bankrupt. Yeah. So in a last ditch effort, they went to Nintendo of Japan and said, look, this Donkey Kong thing seems like it's taken off. We would like the exclusive rights to do the home version of Donkey Kong. And Nintendo said, sure. Sounds great. Nobody's asked yet.
Yeah.
And so what they made was the tabletop Donkey Kong, that first one, the one, the blue one, the blue plastic. It's like enclosed. It's got, so it's in, kind of in the shadows. The screen is set back. So it's really nice and dark in there. And then in 82, Donkey Kong was a mega hit and they were going to do the Atari and Television cartridges, the ports for Donkey Kong. But like you said, George, you're like, well, wait a minute. We have the exclusive rights to Donkey Kong at home.
Nobody else can make it in a home console.
We're back in the console game. Yep. So they started again. They made ColecoVision and they packed Donkey Kong in with it.
Yep.
And then they delayed the ports for Atari and Television, which, by the way, super crappy ports, which I'm convinced they did
on
purpose.
And there's a reason why they're super crappy ports. They did the code for them and they purposely they had the rights. Made them
It was
bad.
Them.
Really?
They delayed it 6 months. So ColecoVision had time to get out in the market and prove they were superior. And then they said, oh, and here's a version for Atari and Television that we made.
That
Good luck with that.
We know it sucks because we wrote it.
Yep. For almost a year, Coleco had the only two ways you could play Donkey Kong at home, tabletop and the ColecoVision.
Smart.
Mm. And then, since the tabletop was so good, they made a ton more of some of our favorites.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the one that I remember the most was Frogger.
Mm-hmm.
I played that Frogger Coleco thing forever. We had two of them on our block. Two different kids had them.
In the neighborhood collection at the arcade?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was so much fun. I love
no
it.
Waiting for Froggers. Come with your quarters. We have two.
None of these games are good, I'm going to say.
No.
They're
right.
Not
objectively
the arcade
good.
Game. Yeah.
It's all the experience together makes
if
it
If you're 12 years old, like I was at the time, 12, 10, 11, you're in that age range and you can't get to the arcade. Damn it. That's the arcade now. That's what you're going to play with your friends. That's where you're going to go to your little forest tree fort thing. And you're going to set these up on the little different stumps that you find. And as kids come in, when they walk up to one of them, you're going to say, put a quarter in the little box. And you have like a little tissue box next to the game that they have to put a quarter in and they can play it. And you're going to monitor them when they lose their lives. You turn
the
game off.
The entrepreneur back then.
Always the entrepreneur. That's right.
Hey, the battery's died. Hey, dude, see the sign? No refunds.
That's right. No refunds.
I got a sinking suspicion it was called George's Jungle Arcade, I think, out in the middle of the woods.
Far from that. Yeah. No.
I know. His friend's like, I would bring my game. All right. I get a cut of every quarter you get.
Yeah. Every quarter you make.
Yeah, I make a
you
dime.
You get three quarters, I get one.
Yep.
Now, of course, they did the other classics, Galaxian, which was, again, not a great version of Galaxian. Nobody gave a damn. It was still awesome.
Yep.
I mean, these were all like loosely based on. I mean, like we're saying,
inspired by. It was as close as you could get at the time. It was,
That's true. For what they could do is the best
they could
do.
12-year-old me, it looked like Donkey Kong to me, right?
Yeah.
Pac-Man? I mean, of course. Why wouldn't you?
Sure.
And these cabinets, when you see them in the wild, like you go to a thrift store or something, I can spot a Coleco cabinet from 40 yards.
Oh, yeah.
That thing cool on the table. I'm like, well, there's one. Let's go see.
Yep.
Actually, I have a Donkey Kong that I bought at a swap meet. And the knucklehead guy was like, does it work? He's like, oh, I don't know. And I don't have the batteries. I'm like, now you know somebody's going to want to try it. I bet it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I bought it sight unseen for $50 and it worked when I got it home. I couldn't.
Wow. I mean, they're almost auto buys for people of our generation who were into
whether
video
it works
games.
Or not. Oh, yeah.
Gives like, looks
you
good
see
on
that
shelf,
Coleco,
right?
Even, yeah, just to put it on a shelf, it's worth whatever, almost whatever they're charged. Sometimes I've seen some of these Coleco cabinets at some of those swap meets or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy wants like $100 and like you said, no batteries to test it or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, really? You want $100 and you couldn't spring 35 cents for some batteries?
Batteries.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. One thing I'd say, like also kind of keep this in perspective that, you know, we're looking at this in the late 70s, early 80s, where it was remarkable that that level of game could be in your hand.
Sure.
Certainly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so the awe of that, like, again, looking back now, it's like, you know, my watch does 1,000 times more than that thing ever did.
Of course.
Yeah. For the time, though, just the idea that I could play a version of the game in my hand.
Mm-hmm. It was enough. It was enough.
It was enough.
More than enough.
I mean, the one that really blew me away, I remember, is Zaxxon. How the hell
that they did that
they
in LCD
port in that. and it was playable. Mm.
If you're not an arcade player, Zaxxon is a three-quarter perspective game that requires up and down on the Z-axis or in and out Z, up and down Y. There's all kinds of math in it, and they figured out a creative way. Now, it wasn't quite the same, like we said, but they made it work in this LCD thing, and they had the Zaxxon license. Oh, hell yeah. And we mentioned Pac-Man, the last one they did of, I think they did, what, six or seven, however many of these they did.
Yeah.
Miss Pac-Man was one of the last ones they did. It was a sequel to Pac-Man. You'll remember it was actually a hack of Pac-Man.
Bought
the rights for, right? The Crazy Auto, whatever he was called. And again, it was pretty much the same game as Pac-Man inside of the cabinet, but I never owned the Miss Pac-Man. When I was visiting Manhattan, I went to an amazing, legendary game store there called Video Games New York.
Uh-huh.
And they have a section that's all behind glass.
Ooh.
And they have a sealed Coleco Miss Pac-Man sitting in there in the glass.
Like new old stock sealed?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Never been opened. Like it's browning because the plastic is kind of flaking a little bit, but it's never been opened.
Ooh. Oh, I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
And I'm thinking, well, what can I, you know, maybe? I didn't see a price on it. So I went to the guy and I'm like,
my God.
Hey, I have some questions about the stuff in the glass over here. And he's like, yeah. And we walked over and I asked about that. I didn't start with the Miss Pac-Man. You know how the negotiations go. You're like, well, I'm interested in this. Oh, and by the way, what about this Miss Pac-Man? I don't see a price on it. And he went, yeah, that's kind of just for display. We have a 5-figure offer that we turned down. I said, all right, I'm no longer in the market for this Miss Pac-Man, apparently.
What if I offered you a 3-figure?
Right? What would you say to a very
big figures? Yeah. There's just only 3 of them.
Right. Yeah. There's right.
Less for you to have to deal
with. I'll start with like an 8, maybe. But apparently he said that they've done their own research because that they major in that. They're at the Video Games New York and Manhattan. And he said there are only recorded 2 of them in existence that are unopened still.
Wow.
And they have one there.
Mm.
So when I go to Manhattan, I stop by and visit it, but I won't ever open it.
Hey, that's Frogger.
Yeah, it's the official tabletop version of the arcade game.
It plays the same. Where'd you get it?
Mr. Arcade is here.
Galaxian, it's mine. Pac-Man.
You want to take it home?
Yeah. My own Pac-Man. Mr. Arcade, could you?
Donkey Kong?
Donkey Kong?
The official tabletop version.
Frogger, Donkey Kong, and Midway's Pac-Man and Galaxian. The arcade games you can take home with you from Coleco.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our 4th listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Oh, wait, I was playing my handheld football game. Okay, time to wrap up this edition of the Backtrack.
That was the lamest damn intro into this section I've ever
terrible.
Heard.
Well, but keep going.
That was terrible, but keep going. I don't have any better suggestions. Before we leave the show, we love to take just a couple seconds here toward the end to express our gratitude to the people that support us financially over on Patreon and elsewhere that we'll hear about momentarily. But first, these are folks that take a few bucks every month to support what we do here on the podcast, over on YouTube, and on the website. And I want to thank you each and every one. Shelby, Greg Z, Agile, Dana, Travis, Jason, Levi, Butterspider, Chet, Stew Monkey, Adam, Sean, Uno, Clay, Tony, T2, Stubaka, David, Matt, Arla, Mike C, Misso, Steen, Davis, Marcus, Thomas, Chad, Blasted or Stashit, Lee, Mark, Dan, Jonathan H, Ben, Greg, L, Chris, and Slowmo.
Woo-hoo!
Every single one
well
of
done,
you,
sir.
Thank you so very much. If you would like to add your name to this roster, we would love to have you. George, would you tell the fine 4th listeners how they can make that happen?
Absolutely. All you do is you head over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon or patreon.com/genxgrownup. You create one of those free accounts, then you go over and you start spending money. $1, $2, $5. We don't care. Send us whatever you feel appropriate. We are super happy to receive it. Yep. But that is not the only way that you can support Gen X Grown Up. Oh. We now have the Join Members section of our YouTube channel. You go to watch one of those little videos. There's a little button right next to the subscribe that says Join. You click that. $2.99 a month. You become one of the fine folks I am about to talk about. Mike C, T2, Stubaka, Marcus, Misso, Mike B, Blasted Session, Doc, and Mike M.
Yes.
Are all YouTube members, and we appreciate every single one of those fine folks.
We certainly do. George, couldn't have said it better myself. Wouldn't want to try to say it any better myself. We'd make that list grow. We appreciate each and every one of you. Love your support. Love the backing. It makes it really puts gas in the tank and helps encourage us to do what we do. That is going to wrap it up for this edition of The Backtrack. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, but next week with our regular show, of course. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know, I appreciate you.
Oh, man, always fun.
And fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
JetX Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Can't see, it's fuzzy. I can't tell what finger that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, start from a distance.
It's one of five.
You gotta start back here.
Can you turn it up? Now you mentioned Coleco. They started to remember more time. Three, two.
It was a good thing you took over the segues.
It was really helpful. It's been a huge boon to our production. Three, two.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.